for the holidays, but you go home to a dysfunctional mess. And so it doesn't bring up the best, you know, things in your mind. Like maybe you go home and you've got that mom who's always giving you advice and asking questions. When are you going to get married? When am I going to have a grandchild? And it's like, mom. Or maybe you have the dad who just sits in front of the TV and you're like, dad, right? Or you might have the creepy uncle who you don't want to hug for too long, you know? Or maybe it's the grandfather who's got all these smells and noises kind of coming out of his body and everyone just tries to ignore it. Or you just say, hey, grandpa, it's nice outside today. Why don't you sit out in the backyard, kind of a thing. Or it may not be all the people who are there. It may more be like how they look at you. Like what they think about you. Like maybe they're all still talking about back in when you were 5 and you broke that vase. Or when you forgot the lines in the school play in 6th grade. And you're like, people, I have grown up since then. That's not me anymore. And so maybe the idea of coming home doesn't bring up the best imagery in your mind. But I hope that today we might actually change that. And we might get you to a place where you think of coming home as a really good thing. Maybe even the thing that you've been like longing for your entire life, whether you realized it or not. So that's how we're going to start our new series. We're going to talk about coming home in this new series called God Gives a Damn. And what we're talking about in these few weeks is the idea that God really does care about us. You know, some of us moved here. We left our homes around the country and moved here to Las Vegas about 2 years ago to start this church. And we decided to live here for a year before officially launching the church because we wanted to become a part of the community and get to know the people who lived here in Las Vegas. And during that first year of living here, we interviewed hundreds of people and ask them to tell us about their lives and specifically about living life here in Las Vegas. And we heard a lot. And one of the things we heard repeatedly was people told us, you know the thing about living in Las Vegas? No one gives a damn about you. I mean, life is hard. It's probably even a little bit harder here in Vegas than other places. But in other places, people care about each other. And here, no one gives a damn about you. And when we heard that, we were kind of like, well, we do. I mean, we moved here. We left good lives somewhere else to move here because we care about the people of Las Vegas. And that's good. I mean, that's good for you to know. But there's something better. And it's that God gives a damn. That God really cares about us. And that might be something that you struggle to believe right now. It might be something that you don't believe at all right now when you look at your life or the world to think that God really cares, but he does. And there's lots of ways we see that. And today I want to talk about probably the greatest sign, the greatest way we see that. And it's the idea, the fact that God sent Jesus. The Bible tells us that Jesus was God's only son, and he had existed in heaven with God for all eternity in this perfect relationship at home with God in heaven, but that God sent Jesus, and Jesus was willing to come to earth because God cares about us. And he came to show us that, to show us that God loves us and wants a relationship with us and can make a real difference in our lives. One of the things that was interesting about Jesus was that he always hung out with people who thought that God didn't care about them, and so those people didn't care about God. He hung out with people who were like, you know what, God doesn't give a damn about us, and so who cares about him? I have no interest in him. And it was that fact about Jesus that infuriated the religious leaders of Jesus' time. They couldn't stand the idea that Jesus came and he says he represents God and all that, but instead of hanging out with the good godly people who love God, he keeps hanging out with the people who think God doesn't care about us and they don't care about him. And they had this picture of God where they were like, you know what? God's not like that. If you reject God, then God rejects you. And so God wouldn't love these people. And so they couldn't stand the fact that Jesus kept hanging out with people who probably most appropriately would live in a place called Sin City. And this would lead to confrontation after confrontation. I want to show you today one of those confrontations. It happens in the book of Luke in chapter 15. If you have a Bible, you can open there. If you don't have a Bible with you, that's fine. We're going to put the verses on the screen. If you don't own an easy-to-read translation of the Bible, we actually give them out for free at the Velcro Bar. Velcro Bar is kind of our connecting place. It's a place where you can ask questions, get information, all that kind of thing. And you can get free Bibles, no catch. Just grab a Bible. We'd love to give you one. So Luke chapter 15, verses 1 through 6 says this. It says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him." Him is Jesus. And this is what happened all the time. The people who most seemed distant from God were the people who wanted to be closest to Jesus. And it says, "But the Pharisees and teachers of the law," those are the religious leaders of the day, "muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" They couldn't understand why the people who seemed furthest from God wanted to be about this guy who claimed to be God. Verse 3, "Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, 'Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep.'" So the shepherd in this story has 100 sheep, and 100 is a lot of sheep, right? I mean, I don't know much about sheep, but 100 is a lot of sheep. And so I'm kind of surprised when this shepherd notices that one is gone. You know, one shepherd, the story says, wanders away, and it's kind of surprising to me that he would even notice because he's got 100 of them. But not only does he notice that it wanders away, he cares. And that's really puzzling to me when I read this, because I'm like, one out of 100 is just not that many, and a lost sheep is easy to replace. It just doesn't seem like it should be a big deal, right? You just wait till spring, you'll have a bunch of baby sheep running around. I understand that on a typical sheep ranch today, there will be about 10 male rams who will service about 4,000 female sheep. That's the way it works. So 10 male rams who will service about 4,000 female sheep. Interestingly, the female ram will only have in a year about a six-hour window of receptivity to a male ram's advances. But that's no problem for the male, who can perfectly kind of detect when his lady friend would like him to come over for a nightcap. But the entire mating season lasts for only 2 weeks of the year, which means that each male ram will service about 400 female sheep in 2 weeks. That's about 30 a day. Oh, to be a ram. Let's pretend I didn't say that. The thing in the story is, like, you read it and you're like, what's the big deal about one missing sheep? You can replace it easily, right? But not in this story. And the reason is because Jesus is using this story as a parable or a metaphor. The story isn't really about a shepherd and a sheep. In the story, the sheep represents you and me, and the shepherd represents God. And the point of Jesus' story about the shepherd and the sheep is that God gives a damn about you, that God cares about you. That's an understatement. Maybe this is better. It's like the point of Jesus' story is that God has only one treasure, and it's people. God has only one treasure, and it's you. That's interesting. Think about that for a minute. Like by contrast, take me for instance. Now, I have got so many things that I care about, so many things that I value, so many things that can make my day a little bit better, right? Like when I get up in the morning, if I want my day to get off to a good start, I can eat a bowl or two of my favorite cereal, Cocoa Pebbles. Anyone with me? Yes, you're right, yes. And then I drive to work, and if I want, I can listen to some of my favorite music on my iPod, and that just makes my, you know, kind of lifts my spirits a little bit. And when I get to work, I've got a chance of getting a lot of work done, and when I do, that makes me feel good. When I go home, I get to spend time with my wife and kids, and they're great, and most of the time, that part of my day is a blast. But maybe if things are a little bit stressful, that's okay because dinner's coming and maybe we're having one of my favorite meals. And if not, well, that's okay because maybe we'll have dessert that night. And my wife makes this bananas Foster thing. It's incredible. And so maybe we're having that. And if we're not having dessert, that's okay because maybe later I'll get dessert. You know what I'm saying? Let's strike that one too. And if not, well, I'll watch TV and I got some favorite shows, or I can check out SportsCenter and see, did the Dodgers win today? Did the Raiders win today? And that makes my day better when they win. And I can check on my fantasy football team or on my NCAA bracket. And so I just have so many things I care about and I value and that make my day better. God is not like me. God is not like me. God doesn't enjoy Cocoa Pebbles or Bananas Foster. He doesn't listen to his favorite songs on the iPod. It doesn't make his day better. God doesn't get a charge of accomplishing a lot of work. He doesn't have favorite TV shows. He doesn't have a team he roots for or investments in the stock market that he tracks. Now God has one treasure, and it's people. God has one treasure, and it's you. And that's why in Jesus' story, when this one sheep wanders off, the shepherd not only recognizes it, he cares. Now, the sheep in Jesus' story wanders off, and that is no surprise to people who know about sheep, because sheep do tend to wander off. Sheep tend to wander off, and when they do dumb things, and they get stuck, and they don't wander home. Sheep aren't the kind of animal that can find their way home, because it turns out sheep are not bright animals. They're not. You can tell if an animal is bright or not by whether or not it gets its own TV show or movie. Have you ever thought about that? It's true. Like if an animal is bright, they tend to give it a TV show or a movie. Like can anyone think of a show that featured a famous dolphin? Flipper, right? And dolphins are smart. They get a TV show, right? There have been some famous dogs like Lassie and Rin Tin Tin, Beethoven, that dog got a movie. There's some horses that were smart enough to act, and they put them in movies. There's Black Beauty, a movie about Black Beauty, and there was Seabiscuit. Even pigs. Is anyone in the room old enough to remember the show Green Acres? Anyone ever seen Green Acres? A few of us, yeah? Does anybody remember the name of the pig in that show? No. It was Arnold Ziffel. That's right, Arnold Ziffel. And Arnold Ziffel was a pig whose tail could forecast the weather. Apparently, a very bright pig, apparently. Now, let me ask you this. Can anyone name a famous sheep? Yes, Lamb Chop. But I hate to break it to you. Lamb Chop was not actually a sheep. Lamb Chop was a puppet. You know, Lamb Chop couldn't really talk. It was Sherry Lewis's hand the whole time doing the talking, because sheep are not bright animals, and so they don't get their own TV show or movies. They just don't. When you learn about sheep, it's interesting. They're so dumb, they just follow the whole herd kind of a thing. And so this is true. Sheep will kind of walk together, move together in a herd. And if the front sheep walks off of a cliff, what will happen is that every single sheep in that herd will just one by one walk off the cliff. I mean, you would think that there'd be one sheep, just one, like the valedictorian of the sheep, you know, who would just look at that and go, wait a second. I noticed that Sally went off the cliff and did not return. I'm going to ponder this truth for a few moments before recklessly pursuing the same course of action. But no, sheep don't do that. They just follow each other off the cliff. They're just dumb animals. And not only do they do kind of stupid things and wander off, they tend to get stuck. There's an old term, some of you may have heard this, it's an English term called a cast sheep. Have you ever heard of a cast sheep? What a cast sheep is when a sheep wanders off and is away from the shepherd and can't get help, they will often get on their backs. And a sheep that gets on its back almost certainly cannot regain its footing. They just get stuck on their backs and just kind of trying to get on. They can't. But the problem is that on its back, a sheep will start to have gases build up in its rumen. And when those gases build up, they start to block blood circulation. And so a sheep, a cast sheep, a stuck sheep on its back, if it's hot and sunny, will die within 4 or 5 hours. If it's a cool climate, it may live for a day or two before dying on its back. So, sheep, what we learn is they're not smart. They tend to wander off. When they do, they do stupid things. They get stuck in bad situations, and they never just kind of luckily wander home. And the sheep in Jesus' story represents you and me, right? And in fact, the Bible says this elsewhere. There's another verse in the Bible that says, and we, like sheep, have gone astray. Now, you might hear all that and go, wait a second, this is really insulting, right? So you say, let's just be clear. Sheep are stupid. They wander off. They do dumb things. They get stuck and they never wander their way home. And the sheep represents me. That's what you're saying? Yes. But isn't it true? Isn't it true? I mean, seriously? Are you not like that? I am. My wife is. My kids are. Every friend I've ever had is. If you're not like that, if you don't do dumb things and wander off and get stuck and not wander your way back to the right place, if you're not like that, I want to meet you because I have never met anyone like you in my life, and you're fascinating because we're all like that, right? We all tend to wander away. We all tend to do stupid things. Self-destructive things, selfish things, sinful things. We all find ourselves stuck, rumen, gases, what's happening, right? And none of us, rarely do we just kind of find ourselves just wandering back down the right path. When we get lost, we tend to stay lost. And that's a problem for us. That's our problem, right? What's our problem? Our problem is, I do dumb things, and I wander away from where I need to be, and I go off pursuing things, and it never leads me in the right direction, and I get stuck, and I don't get back where I need to be. That's our problem, but it's also a problem for God. It's also a problem for God, because remember, God has only one treasure, and it's people. God has only one treasure, and it's you. And that's why the shepherd in Jesus' story goes off searching for the sheep, right? Because he cares, and the sheep's not going to come home on its own. And so he goes off searching. Did you notice the wording Jesus uses? He said the shepherd decides to go off searching for the sheep until he finds it. The shepherd did not say, hey, I'm going to go off and look, you know, for an hour or two, I'll look around the neighborhood. He didn't say, I'm going to put up a sign, missing sheep, you know, on a pole. He didn't say, I'll give it the old college try. No, he said, I'm going to go searching for the sheep until I find it. I am not going to give up. I will never stop this pursuit until I have this sheep back home, right? And this is a picture. This is the picture that Jesus is giving you of God's heart for you. This is God's heart for you. What God says is, I don't care. I don't care that you wandered away. I don't care why you left. I don't care where you've gone. I don't care what you've done. Still, you're my treasure. You're what I care about. And so what matters to me is that you're found and that I get you home. Now, let's just be really honest this morning and admit that is not the picture that many of us have of God, isn't it? It's not. A lot of us have a picture of God that's a lot closer to the Pharisees, the religious leaders of Jesus' day, who thought, Jesus, why are you hanging around with people who have gone in the wrong direction? Because they don't deserve the love of God, right? A lot of us feel like, you know what? Because I left, because I've lived the life that I've lived, because I've done stupid, selfish, self-destructive things and gotten stuck, there's no way I can go home. There's no way God could still love me. A couple years ago, my family went to a water park, and we're walking along, and there was this kid standing there, and he is crying his eyes out. And we're like, oh, wow. And so we went up, and it quickly became obvious that he was separated from his mother. He was like, and we're like, okay, calm down, slow down. And so we're like, okay, let me ask you some questions. So we start asking questions. We're like, where did you last see your mom? What's your mom's name? What color bathing suit is your mom wearing? How tall is your mom? What color is her hair? And so we take this kid by the hand, and we start walking through the water park, and we're calling out her name. We're looking for somebody with that color hair. Finally, we come around this corner, and we see this frantic lady, and she matches the description. And she comes around the corner, and she's like this, and our kid's like, and so we realize this is it. This is obviously the mom. This is, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be really cool. Like, I helped this kid find his mom, and I'm going to get to see this joyful reunion. This is going to be, like, really a neat moment. And so finally, the mom sees the kid, and the kid sees him, and the mom looks down, and she opens her mouth, and out comes, "Don't you ever do that to me again, or I will kill you. If you ever leave me again, I am going to punish you so bad." And I heard that, and I was like, run! Go get lost. Get out of here. I'll distract her. Get away. It's like, wow, I see why he left her, man. That's crazy. True story. And here's the deal. I think a lot of us, that's our picture of God, isn't it? Let's just be honest, right? What we think is, yeah, I walked away from God. I got distracted, lost, whatever. But there's no way I could go home, because if I did, God would be like, how dare you do that to me? If you ever do that again, I will kill you, right? That's kind of the picture we have of God, just like the Pharisees did, right? The religious leaders. And so we think there's no way. There's no way I can go home, because if I did, God wouldn't accept me. And even if he did, he'd probably make me feel guilty for the rest of my life for leaving him and for what I did while I was gone. But that's not the picture we get of God in the Bible. That's not the picture that Jesus gives us of God. Jesus gives us this picture of this God who is perfect and loving and forgiving, and despite the fact that we wandered away from him, is searching for us and will search for us until he finds us. I can tell you that's actually my story. Some of you know, some of you don't, but my mother is Jewish. My father was a professional poker player here in Las Vegas. And so you put that together, and you might kind of do the math and go, they probably didn't take you to church a lot. You'd be right. I never went to church, not one single time my whole life. Growing up, I did not know anything about God or Jesus or Christianity. And I wasn't interested. Never went to church, never got invited, didn't want to go, wasn't searching for God. But God was searching for me. I had no idea, but the whole time God was searching for me. Finally, at the age of 20, God got my attention. And I'll tell you a little bit more of that story next week, but God did something to get my attention. And when he did, I spent the next couple months, for the first time in my life, kind of seeking God. And what I did was, I spent months investigating the whole God thing just to figure out, is this something I could believe? Why would I believe this? Is there any like evidence or facts about this? Or is it just something people accept with blind faith because I can't be that person? And so I spent months studying it, and to my great surprise, after months of it, I realized it's true. Like, I could prove it was true. But the most shocking thing to me wasn't that it was true, as surprising as that was. The most shocking thing to me was that God loved me. Like, because I knew who I was. I knew how far I had gone, what I had done, and I was like, there's no way. There's no way a perfect God could love and forgive and want someone like me. But that's exactly what I discovered in the Bible and in Jesus. And that's exactly what you'll discover if you seek God as well, that God is this perfect Father who is searching for you and will search for you until he finds you. Did you notice in the story when the shepherd finally finds the sheep, did you realize what he did? Jesus says that he joyfully put the sheep on his shoulders and took it home. Now, I really don't know much about sheep, but I do know the one place I don't want one is on my shoulders, right? Like, I mean, sheep are dirty and smelly. They don't wear diapers. I don't want a sheep like this. But not only does the shepherd put it on his shoulders, joyfully puts. Why? Because he found his sheep. And he brings his sheep home and he throws a party. He calls all his neighbors and he says, come rejoice with me. Why? The next verse says, I have found my lost sheep. And you need to know, no matter how far you wandered, no matter how stupid you've been, selfish you've been, self-centered, self-destructive, sinful you've been, this is God's heart for you. He is searching for you. He will search for you until he finds you. And when he finds you, he will joyfully bring you home. You know, after telling this story about the shepherd and the sheep, Jesus goes on to tell two more stories. The third in this little trilogy is a story about a father. And this father is this amazing, loving father. And he's got these two sons. And one of the sons, despite having this incredible home to live in, his father loves him, he just starts to kind of let his mind wander and imagine there must be something else. You know, I got it great here, but there's got to be something else out there that I don't know about, something else that's better. And so what he does is he rejects his dad. I mean, just like awfully rejects his father and leaves home. He runs from home and he goes off searching for life, you know, fulfillment, joy, what he thinks is out there apart from home. Interestingly, in this story, the twist is, a kid, a person, is not a sheep, right? And a person has a certain level of free will that maybe a sheep doesn't have and that you have to respect. And so whereas the shepherd goes searching for the sheep and carries it home, this father, he can't go and force his son to come with him. He can't go and carry his son home. And so rather than searching, what the father does, Jesus says in the story, is he sits on the front porch. Like from the day the son leaves, he just sits on the front porch staring down the road, hoping and praying that there's going to come a day when my son will come home. Not caring that his son rejected him, not caring that his son thought there was something better out there, just hoping and praying that his son will come home. Every night when he goes to bed, lighting a candle and putting it in the window, hoping that if my son comes home at night, maybe this candle will illuminate the path and lead him towards home. This son, he goes out and he actually gets everything he's wished for. And it turns out it's not enough. It's not what he thought it would be. And he gets to a place where he realizes that everything he really wanted in life was home. It was home the whole time. He had it and somehow wandered away from it. And he finds himself kind of like a sheep on its back. He finds himself stuck in this position where he's like, I don't know what to do. I'm stuck, and I'm going to die like this. But his problem is he has this picture of his father, kind of like the religious leaders have of God and kind of like a lot of us have of God. He had this picture where he thought, there's no way after what I've done that dad would ever take me back. But finally, he's just so empty that he decides, you know what, I've got to give it a try. And so he makes this long journey home. And there comes this day finally when the father sees the shadow in the distance and his heart kind of leaps inside of him because maybe? And then he kind of can see the gate of the shadow and he realizes, that's got to be my son. And he just starts running. And when he finally gets to his son, he just wraps his son in this big bear hug. And the son pushes him away because he still has this picture of his father. He's like, there's no way that you can forgive me. And the father just grabs him back again and he starts screaming. And what the father screams is back to the house. He screams, my son is home. We are having a party. We're going to rejoice because the son who left has come home. You know, here's the deal about you and I. We have a lot in common with sheep. You know, we wander away, we're dumb, we do sinful, stupid, selfish things, we get stuck, we don't wander home. But we're not sheep, we're people, right? And just like the son in the story, we have this level of free will that God will not violate. He will not violate your free will choice. And so God is not going to force you home. He's not going to pick you up against your will and carry you home. What God is going to do is there's a sense in which God is going to search for you, but there's another sense in which God is going to sit on the porch and just hope and pray day after day that you will come home to him because he can't force you. And when you finally take a step towards home, when he sees you take that step, he will run to meet you because you're his treasure. Because you're the one Jesus loves. Because you're the one that Jesus came for. And so he will run. And so listen, I don't know where you're at this morning with all this, but I'll tell you this. If you take a step towards God, and right now you might not be able to take that whole journey, but you just take a step towards God, he will run to you, and he will meet you where you're at, and he'll help you to get home. And so I would encourage you, no matter where you're at, just to kind of look out in the distance, and it may be hard for you to see right now, but to see that candle in the window and let it show you the way back home to God. And let me say this, by the way, this is not a story. The story that Jesus tells, this is not a story, and today's message is not a message only for people who have not yet said yes to God and Jesus. Okay? This is not just a message or a story for people who are not yet Christians. This is for all of us. Because here's the truth, and it's a sad truth, but it's true. The sad truth is that this story, the story of the prodigal son, it's not a story that we live out once in our lives. Unfortunately, it's a story that we live out over and over and over and over again. You know, when I finally came back to God and realized, wow, everything I want is in God. It's in this home with God. When I came back, it wasn't like, and the rest of my story is I've been happy with God ever since. The reality is that every week I'm tempted to think, man, maybe there's something else out there. Maybe there's life out there apart from God. Maybe I'm missing something, and my thoughts wander, and my life sometimes wander, and I find myself like a sheep going, where did I go? How did I end up here? And where is God, and why am I on my back, and why can't I get up, and why is there gases building in my room? And maybe not that part. Or like the sun, I find myself going, what did I do? What did I do? I had this home, and I knew, and I left it again. And I find myself just stupid again. And every time we're faced with this decision, well, who's God? Who is God? What picture am I going to have of God? The picture that the religious leaders had and that the son had? And am I going to think, you know what, this time is too many. This time I can't go back. This time he could never accept me. Or will I realize again that where life is to be found is at home in a relationship with God. And I have this God who is perfect and loving and forgiving and will say yes and will take me back and will embrace me when I come. This is for all of us. And we need to hear this over and over again. So I don't know where you're at again, but I hope you take a step towards home today and God will meet you there. And what you'll discover is that coming home in this way, it's a really good thing. In fact, it's what you've been longing for inside your entire life, whether you realize it or not. So, we're going to have the band come up and do one last song. And during this song, I want to encourage you to take what you heard and experienced today and just kind of apply it to your life, okay? Don't kind of evaluate the service, was it good or bad? But instead say, well, what does this have to do with me? What does this mean for my life? So, like, what's the next step? If this whole thing is about a journey towards home, it may be a home that you never knew or never been at, but it's all about a journey towards home. What's the next step towards home? For some of you, it may be that you're like, I can't buy all this today. This is just too much for me. I'm not where you're at yet. Okay, but maybe a step towards home could be saying, I'll come back next week. I thought I was coming just once. I'll come back next week just to learn a little bit more. That's where I'm at right now. Okay. Come back next week. For others of you, maybe I'm ready. I mean, I'm halfway there. I'm ready to embrace God, and I need somebody to talk to, and we got that at the Velcro Bar. Wherever you're at, I pray that you'll take this time to think, what's the next step for me? Because we're all in the middle of this story of the prodigal son. All right? So during this time, we also make communion available on the tables with the candles, piece of bread, cup of juice that represent Jesus' body and blood, which is weird, odd, and also beautiful and mysterious and meaningful because it's a tangible way we get to hold in our hands this bread which represents Jesus' body and this juice that represents his blood. And we get to remember, God cares so much about me. He sent his son. Jesus cares so much about me. He came for me. And he went to a cross and he died for me. That's how much I matter to God. I don't understand why. I don't deserve it, but it's true. And so this is an incredible reminder of that. So if you'd like to take communion, you certainly don't have to if you're not ready for that yet. But if you'd like to, you can go to the tables and grab the bread and juice, bring it back to your seat. And when you're ready, you can eat and drink. So let's pray. We'll do this last song and then I'll close the service. God, I just think that all of us, if we're honest, would admit that these stories are our stories. You know, we're the sheep. We're the son. You know, sometimes we wander away just kind of, you know, just because we're not using our brains and we don't even realize what we're doing, and one day we find ourselves far from you. Other times we may be more like the son who just willfully rejects his dad. And some of us have said, God, I'm going away. I'm seeking life somewhere else, and whether you like it or not. But we all find ourselves in these stories. God, my prayer today is that we would realize that home is where we want to be, that our pursuits in life outside of you are empty. They're small and they're empty, and what we need is you and home. God, would you help us to take that journey home, to realize that you're waiting for us and you love us and you'll forgive us and that you'll offer us life. God, thanks for Jesus coming for us. On a search and rescue kind of mission. We pray all these things in his name. Amen. you're the kind of person, and I'm this kind of person, by the way, who thinks, man, all this sounds really good, right? I mean, to have a God who loves us and forgives us, to have a home where life is to be found and where, like, all the things we're searching for but can't seem to find it, they're there. Like, that sounds really good. I just can't.